Hello and welcome back to another edition of For the Love of a Franchise, where we take a stroll back through many of the different franchises, as you would, that Hollywood has deemed us to give us. And as we started last month with going right back to the 70s with Dirty Harry, we continue this month with the next one in the sequence, Magnum Force, which I think was 1973, directed by Ted Post, and of course starring Clint as Dirty Harry. Guest starring Hal Holbrook, which should be warning bells for anybody who's old enough to have seen all of these films. And joining me as always is Paul, right, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Still haven't managed to pin down Craig.
No.
Unfortunately, he only came back from Florida not that long ago. So we've not tied him down. So possibly on the next set of films we might get him.
We might get a cameo out of him on this lot. I think probably the Deadpool might be the one to get him on for if we could.
Yeah.
Probably enjoyed being coming on for that one, especially with the faces that we know are coming up in the film.
Yeah.
So we should dive into this one again. It's, of course, with Warner Brothers again. We're still in those sort of that 70s logo. And a new theme tune, I think, as well this time.
Yeah. Interesting.
And a better theme tune, I think, for this one. In fact, there are things about this film I like more than the first one we'll go through. I think it's a cracking little theme tune they gave him on this one. I did post on a couple of pages at the time that the opening sequence, I'm assuming the show Sledgehammer in later years, is very much taken from this, I think, with the gun and the sort of...
Yeah, and it definitely feels, it still feels like a 70s cop procedural from TV. Yeah. And the title credits are... as something very much that you expect from a TV show.
He's very much still, yeah, we got that 70s vibe from this one, I don't know, and we probably got the next one. So they're very much of their time in terms of when you watch them from a creative point of view.
Yeah.
But it is pretty kind of cool, that red background and that gun with him talking over the top of it. And I think this was interesting as well with the start of this film, is that he's got a new partner.
Yeah, I said that. At least they kind of mentioned the changing of the partners as well.
The other previous guy was teaching.
Yeah, which I thought with these sort of films, that's not the sort of thing they kind of normally just move on from the previous film. Whereas this, it kind of tried to tie it in.
Yeah, they're often quite self-isolated as these sort of franchise films.
Yeah.
I suppose Lethal Weapon, perhaps in later years to some extent, with Joe Pesci being in the background and stuff, there was a sort of a through line. But yeah, but in terms of this one, yeah, it was just a nice little reference back to his previous partner. Although we should say that this one doesn't have such a good fate at the end of it.
No. And what I will say, it's a very different start to the previous one, because you have the whole... The opening sequence of the first one is... it's pretty much silent.
Yeah.
But for the gunshot, whereas this is really balls to the wall action right from the word go.
Straight into the main crux of the plot with that first killing.
Yeah.
And we got rogue coppers on our hands.
Yeah. Yeah, and it certainly makes you think it's like a sting to start with. And then it turns out that it's really not.
No. Have you seen this one before?
No, I don't think I have, to be honest. As I said, I'm sure I'd seen bits of the first one, and everybody knows Harry as a character. It's public domain.
It must have come a bit of a shock then that the first time you see the coppers doing this in this film for you.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. And again, we don't see Harry kind of for a little while. Doesn't make his first appearance until after all the action's kind of finished.
Yeah. We also see him running up. They set out early that his boss Briggs is a bit of a tool in it as well.
Yeah, and that again, that's the follow through from the first film, is that the Force clearly don't like him.
Yeah. Yeah, he has a new boss, and he still rubs him up the wrong way.
Yeah.
But also, like, with the early on, we got the the bit with Harry on a completely different job as well in this one early on.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And that kind of is where this film, I'm going to say it now, I think this one's better than the first one. And I feel like Harry, right from the word go, is a much more rounded character.
Mm.
There's so much more to him in this film than there was in the first one.
Mm. Yeah, well, yeah, well, we see him with a bit of a love life as well in this one.
Yeah, like yeah, he's got a bit of a life full stop outside of the force in this one.
Yeah, we see one of his neighbours as well later on in the letterbox. A couple of his neighbours, actually, one of them we see quite well. But yeah, we see him on the. This is the one with the jumper, isn't it? So,
yeah,
you know, I think there were Lethal Weapon vibes in that. I think later on, I wonder whether they poached that from this, where he's sort of not messing around with a jumper.
Yeah.
it's funny how you look back with it being Warner Brothers. Well, that Lethal Weapon franchise later on in years does seem to borrow one or two bits and pieces from the Harry films, I suspect.
Yeah.
I mean, Shane Black, who wrote the first one, I think, didn't he? He's very film aware. So it's inevitable, I suppose, that this sort of style of film will reflect in other ones later on.
Yeah, definitely.
Anything else you want to take?
To be honest, the next sequence when he impersonates a pilot, it's so different. It's such a different Harry than we'd seen in the previous. It's actually quite funny, and it's not something you expect from Clint. Though sometimes it comes across his character studies are sometimes a little bit comedic when they aren't trying to be. Even talking like more recent years, things like Gran Torino probably wasn't meant to be as funny as it is. But when he's shouting "Get off my lawn" at people. He has got a comedic element that he probably doesn't really mean. But he does showcase that in this film, I think, and especially with the whole impersonating a pilot thing.
When I say on another job, this is a bit where I sort of get myself confused a little bit in this one, where it's him sort of taking out the hostages. Not the jumper. But it's really well done, though. And it's just...
Yeah.
He pushes it right to the last minute, doesn't he, before he kicks me? Oh, I can't fly.
Yeah. Right, literally, as he's about to take off. No, I can't fly it.
No. But it's just... And I don't know who's more shocked, the terrorists or the cabin crew, cockpit crew. But that's Harry in a nutshell. It's just, I think it's... That's just the way he does things. And then, can be quite funny sometimes. And also we get in this early sequence, we get the setup of those other coppers and including a very young David Soul.
Yeah.
And Tim Thomerson, I think, is in there. And I want to say Robert Urich. And also I think one of the coppers as well, which Lethal Weapon again as a reference, it basically turns up as a villain in Lethal Weapon in later years.
Yeah, and also the main one that does a lot of the damage. Quite clearly, that's who they based Robert Patrick's Terminator on.
Yeah, that Brang helmet and
and kind of the striding.
Mm.
Kind of, there's no doubt there was some influence there on James Cameron's part.
But and we're already seeing early on in the film what a bunch of twats they are a little bit. And that mafia party, basically the swimming pool party, is brutal. And it just shows what a bunch of dicks they are, and where they differ from Harry is that innocent people get caught in the crossfire. All the women and guests around the pool that weren't the mafia guys.
Yeah.
And as we get that later on with Harry as his conversation, and that's what sets him apart. Yeah, he doesn't like scumbags, but he does his best to ensure that innocent people aren't caught in the crossfire, despite everything that his bosses say. about him.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. He's very much on the better side of that whole argument. That's for sure.
Yeah, was it? And he says that. Was he says to her, to who's revealed to be the main villain at the end? That his old boss, that it's not a perfect system, but it's the one he works within. And until they find a better one, that's the one he's stuck with.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we also then, like you were saying about him having to get some extra character stuff, we also see this more softer side as well with the one copper's, his one copper friend's kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Which also plays into the whole, this whole new side of him, with him obviously having a girlfriend in quotation marks.
Yeah.
It's quite clearly she also wants something from him.
But it's the fact that you also got some from the mum of those kids as well, because she wants him badly.
Yeah.
But it, again, it shows that Harry's not having anything to do with a married woman or separated woman or whatever that's going to cause a sort of mess. So they do a bit to sort of round his character out a bit more in this one and show some more of his beliefs a little bit, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely learn more about what he's about.
Yeah.
From this film.
Because the first film was very much this gruff guy who's one thing is to catch the Scorpio killer.
Yeah.
But this one just, it shows this softer side and this funnier, cleverer side as well, like with the pilot stuff. And I like the development of him in this one, actually.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm much more of a fan of his character in general. He's just so much more rounded in this. Mm. You actually care about if something goes wrong for him, whereas the previous one, he was quite hard-nosed throughout most of it. And they do certainly soften him up and make him play to the audience a bit more in that sense. And you can see why the franchise continued after this, because I think if they'd have done the same thing again,
yeah,
I think it may have been a hard watch for more than a couple of films.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we'll see going through them. The five films all have very, very different stories, actually, and relationships. It's a funny one. You find yourself kind of, as you go through the film, kind of half getting what the four coppers are doing, particularly with the pimp.
Yeah.
But that pimp is nasty, and he basically had that coming.
Yeah.
When he's sticking glue or something, he sticks something, or he sprays something down in her, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And he's a nasty piece of work. But it's brutal that when he gets executed on the side of the road.
Yeah. And I it's quite funny because I, within the space of like 5 minutes, I'd written, oh, we've got a completely new storyline. We've got a bit of a B plot to it. And then obviously it turns on its head and that B plot is kiboshed within 5 minutes.
Yeah, just sort of keep you on your toes. I did at this point scribble down one thing which was amused me, is that this sort of pink Cadillac pops up in the film, which was a film that he did a film in later years called Pink Cadillac, where I think he plays like a bounty hunter or something.
Yeah.
I think it was a comedy. Yeah. I'm almost sure he went straight to VHS over here.
Don't think
it's in the States.
Yeah.
Coastal or something like Burn. It was a bit hit and miss.
Yeah.
At the back end of the 80s before you'd like in the line of fire. And it just amused me that there's the sequence of Pink Cadillac, because that's going to foreshadow in there. I'm just what else that sort of. And then we also see eventually this relationship sort of with his neighbor. She's quite cheeky, I think. Which basically ends up in scoring. I do love how it doesn't quite go to plan initially, though, because he gets a phone call off his boss, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And she has to wait then until he comes back. Especially, you think she's actually gone as well, and then she comes out the bathroom.
Yeah. The one thing I did want to pick up is when the woman gets chucked off the balcony. And the absolutely awful dummy that they used with the arms flailing. Like it's made of a bit of rubber.
Yeah, because that's another brutal execution, that one with the dealer, isn't it? Not a dealer.
Yeah.
And it's like they're having like a private party, and you're having a little bit of an orgy. And again, that's a case where two more innocent people get murdered in the middle of it. Just another one that shows the sort of difference between them and Harry is that they don't care who's in the crossfire, as long as they take out the villain.
Yeah.
Got off. I think some of the other things that just stand out for me in this film. I scribbled down your Harry scores. That
yeah. It's not the typical character progression that you expect from one of these films, but it's progression nonetheless for Harry. Mm.
Yeah. Charlie was the name of the other copper. I think that's the one with the kid. And they do the bloody dirty on Charlie and set him up with that killing in the mini orgy.
Yeah.
And that's brutal when he comes out the lift, and I think it's David Saul's character, isn't it? I think it stood there in the car park and executes him there and then. And it's a little bit of a shit on him, really. They've sort of dragged him into that conspiracy and then dumped him.
Yeah, very much so. And sticking with the cops, the connection between Harry and the fact that it is another cop, I feel makes for a better through line.
Yeah.
For the story, yeah. Because he has some connection. The previous one, obviously, there's the connection of the fact that he's arrested him and so on. But this is someone that he knows and has spoken to and has dealt with. That kind of really does move the story along in a sense.
Yeah. And then you've got these four young guys as well who sort of kind of initially admire him.
Yeah.
As well. Particularly Saul's character in that shooting contest. But I love that even at that point that Harry's sort of using that relationship as well.
Yeah.
To suss them out, because he goes back and digs the bullet out, doesn't he, out of the building at one point, out of the shooting gallery thing. So already he's all, because he gets his suspicions, I think, quite early on, doesn't he, in that respect. And then they do kind of stand out like a sore thumb. I mean, there's even at one point there's an accusation that people in the force thought the four of them were gay, weren't they? Because they had such a good relationship with each other. And that was an interesting throwaway comment as well at the time, because Harry suggests he didn't care if they were.
Yeah.
As long as they're good at the job. And that was interesting in the seven. I mean, obviously, it's a bit clunky in that 70s style of dialogue in terms of the reference of it. But it's quite interesting there that for somebody who's kind of like this right-wing people's god, that Harry didn't care about sexuality even then. As long as they were good at the job. And I think that's probably what pisses him off, is that they weren't really good at the job in the end.
Yeah, very much so.
Because they sort of dishonor the badge somewhat. Something else I wanted to point out, pick up on. Oh yeah, and we get, as the film goes on, we get more and more of an attitude of Briggs as well. At one point when he says that people are guilty until proven innocent, effectively. I said at the start as well with Hal Holbrook, if anybody's not some of his other films in the 70s, he was often the go-to villain guy, the wolf in sheep's clothing kind of villain. There's a film called Capricorn One as well, which he has a similar role in. And he always did him so well as well. He's sort of the person you least expect to be a villain.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how this film feels as we get into that final portion of the film. There's some twists and turns that you don't expect. First, the reveal that it's all of them, and it's not just the one Rocky, it's that whole group of them. And then the bigger reveal that Harry's boss is actually the overlord of all of that.
Yeah, yeah. You do not see that coming first time round, really. That he was planning that. And we also see that in that shootout sequence in the docks.
Yeah.
They sacrifice another one of them.
Yeah.
I think it's Thomason's character at the door when he's basically ripped to pieces by bullets at the door. And it all cranks along quite nicely, I think, to sort of the setup where Harry takes the bomb out of the letterbox. He's still got it.
Yeah, and I thought that was a very clever device as well.
Mm.
To have that to put not just his working life in jeopardy, but then to put his home life in the firing line as well.
Yeah, because a bloody bomb in there would have brought down the bloody part, the entire block, really, probably. Which just shows that they'll stop at nothing. I do love the exchange with his neighbour with the glasses.
Yeah, on the stairs when he comes down, and that's my list box. What are you doing?
And then when Harry tells him there's a bomb in there, he just almost shits himself.
Yeah, and runs up the stairs as quickly as he possibly can. Doesn't go to the front door. He runs back into the building.
Even if the fact that it might go off. Back in the apartment then. But of course, then that's what then leads in, of course, to the climax. A, the fact that Parker, his partner, ends up getting killed. It's really sad when they do that to him. He's just come back from his groceries.
Yeah.
And he goes to his letterbox, and because Harry cannot get hold of him on the phone. And then we get, of course, the reveal when Briggs comes to the apartment, and then him and Harry are in the car, and he sort of just carries on, makes him go in a different direction. And that, of course, then is when we get that verbal shadow when Harry sort of mentions the fact that it's a shitty system, it's the only one they've got. And that kind of just, that little sequence sort of just sums him up, his character.
Yeah.
And he is unconventional and uncompromising, but he does work within the law.
Yeah, very much so.
He just sits quite on the cusp of it.
Gets as close as he possibly can.
Yeah, yeah. But unlike them, he has regard for other people. He would never, in a shootout, take out innocent bystanders to take out the bad guy.
Yeah.
They would. And I think that they generally shot. Well, there's that confrontation scene where they catch up with him in the car park, don't they, at the welcome committee.
Yeah.
And the realization that they are different. Because they said they looked up to him to that point, and they realize that he's more part of the system than they are. And so that was interesting as well, that sort of that young rookie green cops versus that sort of old grizzled, more experienced cop who kind of knows how things really are.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I also want to bring up, I think that final chase sequence is superb. Really well put together.
Yes, I've written down here, great chase.
Yeah, but some brilliant stunt work in it. And it kind of, in the end, it's a bit anticlimactic because after that big chase, it all comes down to something really small.
Yeah.
But it doesn't spoil it.
But I did scribble down, you've got to love the windy roads in that city.
Yeah. Very much so.
On camera.
Yeah.
But I just love the bomb set up in the background. What he's done with that, and he's just I was just left in the car after Briggs after he's tossed him out of the car sort of appears at the end all battered and torn up, and you're sitting there thinking to yourself, mate, if only you see something being all cocky and it's my word against yours. Mate, but you don't know what's in the car like we do. I kind of did cheer a little bit the first time I saw that. He had it coming. But I love that line as well, that Harry then comes out with it, a man's got to know his limitations. And that's just the crux of that film, isn't it? Of that second film. And there's limitations, like you say, in terms of the law as well.
Yeah.
And they kind of exceed those limitations that are set by the law and by society as well, as well as beyond what they're capable of.
Yeah.
And just for me, generally, I think it's not narratively and well put together as well made as the first one, I don't think, but I think it's more entertaining. It's more of it's got more of a sequel feel. It's more popcorny, do you think?
Definitely. As I said earlier on, I think if they'd have continued in the way they were with the first film, I don't think we probably would have seen any more films after this.
No, we'd have probably only got the two. Because they had to go in a different direction with it.
Yeah.
And what they did and what they gave us, I think it's a far more pacey film. It bangs along quite well.
Yeah.
It's still got one of those shocking moments and the shocking deaths. And even though that they are villains, it's still the manner in which they off them all is really shocking and brutal and visceral.
Yeah, it's still got that edge.
Yeah,
I mean, of the first film, but it isn't quite as, I don't want to say dark, because I don't think it is dark, but no. I think it's not quite as, probably, as I said at the top of the show, procedural. It doesn't feel like it's following a linear police storyline.
The first one was much more of a cat and mouse film.
Yeah.
This one, he does seem to have to do a little bit more investigation, I think.
Yeah.
And I say, he's got a good relationship with that partner, and we see the home life stuff. And it does develop his character in a way that often these franchise films might not necessarily do.
Yeah.
These sort of films. Score wise, I think I would probably go into the low 80s just on an entertainment value and probably give it 82.
Well, shocker, I also gave it an 82.
Hey, look at that. Wow. That must be your first when we got back on.
I just had a far better put together film than the first, a storyline that keeps you on edge with plenty of twists and far more personality. I think that's the big thing for me. It had more of a personality than the first one.
Yeah. 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 Cool. Right. Well, I think that's probably this one done. And we'll be back again next month with the third in the series, which is The Enforcer. Looking forward to watching that one. Again, a completely different director. Interesting because Clint directed none of the first three. I think he directed the last two. No, I stand corrected. He directed Sudden Impact. So he did direct one of the franchise, but none of the first three. So yeah, so I say, The Enforcer next month, which I think co-starred Tyne Daly from Cagney and Lacey. Thank you as always, mate, for joining me for
no
this
worries.
One.
No worries. Not a problem at all. Really enjoyed that, as you can tell by my score compared to the first one.
Yeah. And we'll see you all again next month.
Cheerio.